So today, as part of the culture series, as Dave said, I'm going to speak about possessions. Now, this seems appropriate in the context of us celebrating harvest today. And so that's what we're going to look at. But we're going to look at it a little bit from a personal perspective to challenge some, perhaps some of our cultural worldviews about the issue of possessions. Because I believe in the context of our culture, this issue is actually about spiritual warfare. Now, you may be surprised to hear me say that, but I believe that we do need to understand aspects of the spiritual dynamics at work in the whole issue of possessions and money. I'd like to say that there are spiritual strongholds at work in our culture today, and these strongholds attempt to create in us a distorted view of the importance of possessions and money. And so we're just going to name some of these spiritual strongholds, and I'm going to start by naming the first one, which is materialism. Materialism is the attitude that leads us to pursue money and possessions. Materialism tempts us to accept a new morality. It makes the drive for affluence a rival religion. Can I say to you that materialism has millions of worshippers across this planet? And actually, God is the one to whom we should look for security, for identity, for purpose, and for provision. But this idol, materialism, drives us and draws us away from God and from those things which we should rely on God for. And so our security can become rooted in what we earn. We see our identity in terms of our salary or what it buys for us. Our purpose becomes comes to earn more money and more possessions. And all of this, as we look at it, it becomes, as it were, the foundational means of our provision. And so also materialism causes us to assess other people by its standards. And we can get sucked into this. Our desire for stuff. Our desire for things. I don't know whether that's sometimes a challenge for you as we live in this particular culture. Let me give you one example to illustrate this. Something that happened to Helen and I a number of years ago. We visited a furniture store. And remarkably, this furniture store had a sale on, which is very unusual for furniture stores. They had a sale, and we saw a sofa that we liked, and we needed a sofa, and it was in the sale. Amazing. It was one of those few items in that furniture store that happened to be in the sale, like 90% of them. And it was reduced from £1,100 to a mere £500. Now, we didn't really at that point in our lives have that money saved. We were not particularly massively keen on credit cards. We wondered, what about it? But fear not. The hero of the moment came along. The sales assistant. Don't worry, sir. It's not a problem, madam. We can do you a deal. Nothing to pay for 6 months, then interest-free credit for 3 years. All you need to do is sign here. So Helen's not a big fan of those sort of interactions with people, if I'm honest. And she was, I'm not sure, probably we can afford it. But I was fairly confident, though, at this particular time. Oh, it's fine, darling. We, nothing to pay for 6 months. Interest-free credit for 3 years. No interest. Think of all the money we're saving. Now, this is a few years ago, and as I reflect back on that situation, I think to myself, was I right? We're about to go into debt to the tune of £500. We're going to buy an item that will be worth nothing by the time we've paid for it and will depreciate in value as we remove it from the shop. And I'm talking about how we're saving money. Was it wrong? Is that the wrong way to shop? Do you know what? I'm not saying that. If you're here today and you've bought a sofa in that sort of way, this isn't some sort of condemning talk. Oh my goodness, What have I done? I'm such a sinner. No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. It's not about the practicalities and the outworking of that in particular. What I'm saying is this particular example illustrates the challenge that I personally faced at that point in time. My desire to have that item was the driving force in my mind. I'm just speaking personally now. I was in danger of not really thinking it through, being illogical and irrational, because I wanted to own this sofa. And so in the shop, it was a little bit like doing battle with a spiritual cultural stronghold. Now you may say, come on, Terry, this is a sofa. You know, aren't you over-spiritualizing this just a little bit? Well, you know, we've paid for the sofa now, and we used it well, and when it was nearly worn out, we gave it to some friends, and when it was completely worn out, they threw it away, and it's fine, it's not the end of the world. I just mention it as an illustration. What I'm saying is there's a prevailing attitude in our culture which challenges the Christian worldview about money and about possessions, and I know that I have to watch that I don't get sucked into that particular worldview. Does that make sense? This challenge of materialism. Here's another example of a cultural stronghold which can have an impact upon how we view possessions and finances and all of those sorts of things. It's called the pursuit of pleasure. The old-fashioned word for it is hedonism. Now this can be summed up in the phrase, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we may die. Now we hardly need to mention that this is a dominant thing in our culture. We simply look at our television screens to find out that it is. We can identify this particular idol at work. People who live for the weekends, who live for the buzz of the nightclub or the football stadium, people who plan their existence around their holidays, the clubs, the pubs, the bars, they become alternative places of worship. Hedonism is about experiencing something which gives us an emotional high. It's about feeling. And that means if we link it to finance, it can be dangerous. When I was in my late teens, early 20s, back in the mid-80s, credit cards were promoted as the cool things to have. It's less so these days, but back then, you were so cool if you had a credit card. I remember watching the man with his American Express card and ladies falling at his feet saying, that will do nicely, sir. I had an Access card. Who remembers Access cards? Yeah? Who remembers the song? Does you does or does you don't take Access? There's lots of people saying, no, I don't remember that. See, we were taught, and I used to sing that when I took it, you know. Someone said, are you paying? I'm paying by credit card. No, I didn't really. But it was cool to have a credit. Back then, it was cool to have a credit card. And it was cool and clever to pay for stuff on your credit card and to flash your credit card. And so I did. And I paid dearly for it. Because in my humble opinion, the credit card has the ability to contribute to hedonistic mindsets in our culture. Why do I think that? Let me tell you why. One of the problems with plastic is that it makes it easier for us to go to miss out two vital stages that we should go through when we buy something. The first stage is, do I need it? And the second stage is, can I afford it? And these statements, when you have a credit card in your hand, these statements can be replaced with, I want it, and I can have it. Which is the slogan of hedonism. Now, credit cards sitting in our pockets, therefore, can be like time bombs. And again, if you have a credit card, then I'm not criticizing you. Oh, man, credit cards now? What? I've got my sofa on credit. I've got a credit card. He's just absolutely slating me. I'm going to leave this meeting. No, please don't get me wrong. Used properly, credit cards are absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. But you know, if you have a credit card and you're not able to be disciplined with it, can I give you some advice? Get a pair of scissors and conduct a bit of plastic surgery. The third and the final cultural stronghold that I want to mention before we actually get to the Bible is to do with individualism. This keeps cropping up every week. Helen mentioned it in the context of relationships. Martin mentioned it the first week in the context of belief systems. Individualism. It is the stronghold of me first. My job, my future, my career, my success, my family, my security. This is cutting against Christian values, which are about serving others, meeting the needs of others, being in community together. This stronghold cannot cope with anything other than the inward-looking, me-first perspective. And so this challenges us when we come to possessions. Because we can look at the rich and want stuff, or we can look at the poor and give stuff. And actually, we're challenging that stronghold today as we think of others. As we give to projects, the projects that Karen has mentioned, as we give to those, we are about helping and blessing those who genuinely need our help and support. So we're cutting against this individualistic stronghold, even today, as we donate our stuff. But all of these strongholds, materialism, hedonism, individualism, they can influence what we do with our cash and our possessions. Let's look at the Bible. 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 to 11. But godliness with contentment. Paul is the writer here. He's writing to his assistant Timothy, who's taking oversight of a variety of churches. And so he's helping Timothy understand the significance of this particular challenge here in chapter 6 of his first letter to Timothy. So Paul says this, but godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. But you, man of God, flee from all this and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, endurance, and gentleness. So we're just going to systematically work through this little bit of the Bible, and I want to just make reference to other Bible passages as well as we do that. As Paul discusses this issue in this letter to Timothy, he starts with a very important word, contentment. Christian contentment is not dependent upon external things. We find out that Paul emphasizes this particular point and this word elsewhere in Philippians 4 verse 12. He says, I know what it is to be in need. I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in every and any situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. And that's why Paul in verse 6 here comes up with a mathematical equation. I love maths and I love equations. And so this equation is wonderful. It's godliness plus contentment equals great gain. Godliness plus contentment equals great gain. With this in mind, Paul then goes on in verse 7 and reminds us of the basic fact of our human experience relating to our birth and our death. We bring nothing into the world and we take nothing out of it. Job's version of this in the Old Testament, Job chapter 1 verse 21, Job says this, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. So when we're born, we are naked and penniless. We bring nothing into the world. And when we die, in effect, we're naked and penniless. We take nothing out of the world. In relation to our earthly possessions, our entry into this world and our exit from this world are identical. A curious relative at a funeral of a very wealthy lady went to the minister of the funeral at the end of the service and said, "Do you know what she left? What did she actually leave?" And the minister said, "She left everything. She left it all. She didn't take any of it with her." John Stott says, "The possessions are the traveling luggage of time. Possessions are the traveling luggage of time. They are not the stuff of eternity." And we know this when we listen to the words of Jesus, Matthew 6, verse 19. "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourself treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." So here, as Jesus speaks to us about this, he's saying, as you go through life, know what is important. Remember what really matters. Let me tell you what really matters. People. People really matter. Again, as we come back to celebrating harvest today, and at the same time, we remember others. Let's consider people over possessions. Because things will go. They are subject to moth and rust. We want to invest in people. Can I say this? I cannot take any possessions with me to heaven. But I can take my friends. People are eternal beings. Jesus died for people. There may be people in the room today, and you're not even sure of this for yourself today. And can I encourage you that Jesus died for you? He died for people. And the best news in the world is the fact that Jesus has died for you. And Jesus has died for me. And so my motivation and my joy and my desire is to spend my life telling others this best news in the world. Now that's what I see as a good investment. In verse 8 of this passage to Timothy, Paul says, "If we have food and clothing, we will be content with that." He's not talking necessarily about the maximum that's permitted for people to have, for Christians to have, but the minimum. We realize that God is our Father, that He loves us, that He's a good Creator. He grants gifts to His children, and we receive them and we thank them, thank Him for them, which is exactly what we've done today. Harvest celebrations are about thanking God for His wonderful provision. So according to verse 9, if we pursue money as a prime objective in our existence, we're going to fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish desires and harmful desires. And the addictive nature of this means that the more money we have, the more we want. This is foolishness. It's irrational. There are many millionaires who are working themselves into an early grave just to get that little bit more. But the desires are not only foolish, they're harmful. Someone once said that gold is like seawater. The more you consume, the more thirsty you get. The desire for more and more becomes harmful on every level. It's harmful spiritually because we lose our focus and we forget what's important. It's harmful emotionally and mentally. The worry and the anxiety linked to this becomes overwhelming. It's harmful relationally. Our obsession drives us away from other people and relating to other people. And it's harmful physically. We end up working ourselves to death in order to earn what we then have to leave behind. So what we're talking about is not actually entirely relating to what we've got, but it's actually about our attitude towards it. It's what goes on here and in here. It's serious stuff, my friends. We are immersed in a culture where millions of people are falling because money has become the object of their desire. And we are the only ones who can help them. But we have to look at ourselves first. We have to check ourselves. We have to check our own lives before we can speak into the lives of others. We need to look at our own desires before we can bring challenges to anyone else. In verse 10, Paul brings the possibly one of the most misquoted verses in the whole of the Bible. The misquote, of course, is money is the root of all evil. The real quote is the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. So firstly, money is not the problem. It's the love of money. Money is neutral. But it's the love of money. Secondly, the love of money is not the root. It is a root. And thirdly, the love of money is not a root of all evil in the singular. It's the root of all kinds of evil in the plural. There are a number of evils in which people fall when money becomes the major root. Selfishness, fraud, robbery, drug dealing, pornography sales, exploiting the weak, neglecting good causes, betrayal of friends. The list could go on and on. So in this passage, Paul is not condoning poverty. He's condoning simplicity of lifestyle. We should be content with simplicity of living. We will not be content with poverty. We will certainly not be content with our own poverty, but we should be equally discontent with anyone else's poverty. And so again, this is partly about this day, and it's partly about what these gifts are about. And finally, verse 11 addresses us as Christians, the Christians in the room. Paul has pointed out the dangers. He's pointed out the pitfalls. He now addresses the people of God, and he says, yes, there are dangers. People will fall. Evil will result if money becomes the prime obsession, the object of our desire. But you, two really important words. This will all happen, but you, man of God, woman of God, you can flee from all of this. And you can pursue righteousness and godliness and faith and love and endurance and gentleness. Notice there's a running analogy here. We are to flee from evil. And we are to take evasive action. But we're also to pursue godliness. I would say as a human race, we are by our nature runners. Some people in the room say that's not true. I'm not a runner. But within our attitudes and within our mentality, we are runners. We are inclined to run from dangers, and we're inclined to pursue things that attract us. And I want to encourage us in this whole area of possessions and money, if we can learn to run from evil with the same level of commitment that we run from danger, and if we can run after goodness with the same level of commitment that we're inclined to run after success, I think we'll have sorted something out about our sense of direction. So, let's summarize this biblical perspective. Number one, the equation godliness. We've got another slide for this, Hilary. Godliness plus contentment equals great gain. Secondly, we bring nothing into the world. We take nothing out. Our possessions are merely the traveling luggage of time and not the stuff of eternity. Thirdly, money is neutral. It's our attitude to it that we need to look at. It's the love of money which is harmful, not money itself. And fourthly, with this perspective in mind, we can flee from the evils associated with being obsessed with money and possessions, which means that we will avoid falling into temptations and traps and foolish decisions, harmful desires. Instead, we can pursue godliness. And finally, as we celebrate today what God has given us at this harvest service. He reminds us that actually as we become more like Him, our hearts of generosity and compassion will grow for others, because we will see them through His perspective, through His eyes of love and grace and mercy and compassion. So you may feel challenged by some of the stuff I've brought today. It's a challenging subject, as all of these cultural subjects are. Let me tell you, it's something I have to personally keep a check on myself. I can easily lose my focus on this one. I want to emphasize today that there are many and various ways in which we're involved in spiritual warfare in our culture. But in the context of our world and our culture, I believe this one's massive. It's a huge challenge. So I want to encourage us to be wise. I want to encourage us to live simply. I want to encourage us to continue to be generous as we've been generous today. And let's invest in those things which are not temporary. Let's invest in those things which will last forever. Amen.